So a few weeks ago, a bit like Sarah, who spoke to us on Psalm 23, I tried to look up some songs that were based on this psalm. Surprisingly, there are none that I could find. Plenty of YouTube videos with some kind of drone in the background and someone trying to sing these words, but I wasn't going to enforce the band to do that this morning. So let's start. Let's get into this psalm. Let's explore. Well, this psalm was written by someone called David, who Peter mentioned earlier. And if you are not familiar with the Bible or you don't know who David was, he was a character. He started out as a shepherd boy. And when we're first introduced to David in the book of 1 Samuel, he doesn't actually have a name to begin with. He's just known as the youngest son of the family when we first are introduced him when we first see him. So he was just a shepherd boy. His family didn't really have any great plans for him. However, God does speak to him, and God tells him that he is going to be a great king and leader and warrior. Most famously, he killed Goliath. And I've been watching the series House of David on Amazon Prime, and I really recommend it. It's really powerful. Please do go and watch that. The first series is on there. Throughout David's life, we see that he has a really close relationship with God. And a lot of that plays out in the Psalms. We can see Psalms where he is reaching out for God, Psalms where he's celebrating God. Almost every emotion we can see through the Psalms. So, stating the obvious, a bit like me, David was quite cross when he wrote Psalm 109, and not just a little bit. Now, I'm going to struggle to pronounce this word, but this is called an imprecatory. Have I pronounced that right, Psalm? Probably. It's what a lot of commentators call it. And what we see is that there's been some groundless accusation against him, which he wants to in turn have this judgment and this curse upon these enemies that he's talking about. We see that David has been accused of something that he clearly hasn't done. And I don't know if you've ever experienced that panic feeling when someone is accusing you and you've got no idea how to defend yourself and if people will believe you. Well, I've spoken 3 times at Portsford Church. This is my 4th. And every single time I've told a story about my mum. So this is not going to be any different apart from the fact she sat there. So I can't go too mad. But I wanted to give a personal example of when I felt revenge. So when I was a child, I think about 7 or 8, I was furious with my mum. Who knows why? She probably told me off or said I couldn't have something, but I was really not happy. And I decided I wanted to get her back. I wanted her to feel how I felt. And I happened to be sitting at the dining room table at the time, and there happened to be a pair of scissors. And what did I do? I cut up her tablecloth. In the immediate moment, it felt absolutely brilliant. I thought, yes, I've got her. But then, of course, she found out, and it was obviously me. In my panic, I did blame the cat, which is a family story that is now told. Hannah cut up the tablecloth and blamed it on the cat. Yes. In many other places in the book of Psalms, David writes about God's righteousness. And how God is the one who brings justice, and David trusts that he will do so, even in Psalm 108, which is just before it. Whilst David sounds a bit like Peter was saying, he starts quite calm and together, recognising God in this situation. And I guess his explanation of why he feels the way he feels is quite valid, that people have been lying about him, been deceitful, feels quite aggrieved because he's offered the friendship. And I feel like we might sometimes all have examples of when we feel like this. So I'm a millennial, sorry, and I don't know whether MSN Messenger means anything to anyone who is not a millennial, but essentially, when I was a teenager, a bit like children, teenagers now have WhatsApp and Snapchat and all of these things, when I was a teenager, MSN Messenger on the computer was my way of connecting with friends after school. And one evening after school, I logged on to chat to my friends, as usual. And for some reason, I've got no idea how, I had found myself in the middle of this fake love triangle. Basically, I was being accused of having some boyfriend in another school that I knew nothing about, who happened to be my friend's friend's boyfriend, and I'd been accused of this thing. And everyone was messaging me hateful things. Everyone was saying, "What have you done? I can't believe you've done this." And as much as I said, "I don't even know who this boy is, I don't even know what is going on," lots of people were cross with me. They didn't want to be my friends anymore. They were telling other people not to be my friends. And the only thing, the only way I could kind of get myself out of this was to think, I've got to go to the source of this lie and I've got to tell them, look, I'm at your mercy right now because everyone's being horrible to me and I can't do anything about it. I mean, thankfully it has a happy ending because, like all teenagers, by the next day, the next drama had come around and whatever was going on with me didn't matter anymore, didn't exist, so it was fine. But I definitely had that panic feeling of, how am I going to get out of this? How am I going to persuade people that I'm not the guilty one here? I guess another more serious example would be the post office scandal, the Horizon scandal, which I'm sure many of you are aware of, which is where over 900 postmasters, so people that had post offices, were using a system, which an electronic system, which had bugs in it, failures, which meant it looked like they had been cheating the post office out of money, and a lot of them were prosecuted and sent to prison, and it was really hard to prove and defend that they weren't at the cause of this problem, and a lot of them suffered some, you know, mental health issues and reputational damage, and it was quite sad. Looking back at how this psalm unfolds, it doesn't take much for David's rant to start in verse 6. What we see here is not like other psalms, where the psalmist asks for God to enact his righteous justice. And here we see David desperately wanting the accuser to suffer in all kinds of ways. We see the word may a lot. May his children, may his children, may his days, may no one. And for a lot of these mays, it can also be translated as let. I did a little bit of research, and this is the same word, yehi, that is used in Genesis 1 for let there be light, and let there be a vault between the waters, and let there be lights in the vaults of the sky. And I'm not saying this for sure, but I like to imagine that David is calling on God to use this ultimate power that he used in creation for this situation right now. His ultimate power that he used to let there be light. Now David is saying, let this happen, God. A couple of other interesting things while we're here. You might be wondering, halfway through the psalm, David stops talking about they and starts talking about he. And I just wanted to pick up on it because it was something I found interesting. Different commentaries have suggested different things about what this means, but I think it probably means either that David is now talking about a leader of a group of people, or that when he talks about he's talking about each individual person in this group that makes they. Another thing that I found really interesting in verse 6, the word used for accuser is actually the same word that Satan comes from. And again, I think like the may and the let, I think this really just gives us an idea of how extreme David is feeling right now. Another way that he's not holding back the punches. Okay. I've spoken about that middle section, verses 6 to 20, which are angry and arguably unreasonable words. But like Peter said, I am so, so pleased that we can come back full circle to some reason, that David is able to reflect and acknowledge that the ultimate rescue from these situations is Yahweh's love and saving grace, that ultimately he needs to hand this to God. So how can we use this psalm as guidance and encouragement? What can we learn about our own relationship with God from this psalm? Well, a lot of what we read in the Bible, especially in the New Testament, instructs us on how to live our lives. However, like other texts in the books, for example, Job and Jeremiah, I would argue that this psalm is in there not for our imitation, but for our learning. As much as sometimes we feel we want to, it's not okay. It's not okay to wish that our enemies suffer in the way that David pleads. I really like what Carl said a few weeks ago when he was talking on Psalm 37, that we as Christians are not supposed to ignore injustice. We read in Proverbs 31, don't worry, you don't need to flick to all these places, that we have a duty to stand up against injustice, and this can be called righteous anger, where we can be angry about sin and things that go against God's will and law. Righteous anger is a massive topic that I'm not going to talk about today, but I have pre-warned our elders that if anyone wants to have a conversation about righteous anger, please seek them out because they would love to have that. Peter especially would love to do that with you. So what can we learn here? The main point that I have got to tell you today is that unlike David, we have Jesus. I'm going to put some words, I'm going to flick to various places in the Bible. Please don't feel you need to, they're going to appear on the screen. In 1 John, which I think will appear, that might not be big enough, but anyway. We read in 1 John, but if anybody does sin, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ, the righteous one. He is the atoning sacrifice for our sins, and not only for ours, but also the sins of the whole world. Again, we're also blessed to have Jesus' words directly to tell us how we should live. And in Luke 6, I'll read this out, but you can follow it on the screen as well. But to you, this is Jesus, but to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. If someone slaps you on the cheek, turn to them the other side also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. Give to everyone who asks you. And if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. We'll skip a few verses. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, because he is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. See, anger and resentment can be a big barrier for loving our enemies that Jesus calls us to love, to show that mercy. Letting go of anger and resentment is not always easy, though. I was once part of a TV show. I think it's called The Big Questions. It was a Sunday morning program where they have an audience of about 50 people and a few kind of guests dotted around, and you kind of debate some big questions. And the one that I happened to be on, one of the big questions was around forgiveness and to what extent can we forgive people. It was quite a big topic. There's a few different religious leaders there that were talking about it. But actually, the one guy that had been brought in as the kind of guest speaker, I guess, was a guy whose teenage son, had been badly beaten and shot as part of a gang crime in South London. And he told this story about how his son had got involved in this gang and just the really sad story that it was, but went on to talk about his faith and about Jesus calls him to forgive. And lots of people argued against him. Surely that's not right. Surely you haven't forgiven. We don't believe you. And he just opened up and said, the only way I can get past this is to break down that barrier of anger and resentment and forgive the killer. Not for the killer's sake, but for my sake. I know that that's what I need to do. That's how he got that freedom he needed. I must admit, I can be a bit of a stewer, you know, when you stew for a bit. If something's upset me or annoyed me or someone's done me wrong, it can drive me crazy. I refer back to the tablecloth. I need to have it dealt with. I need a resolution and for it to be made right there and then. I need people to know when they've done something wrong and be sorry for it. I stand here today not to preach at you, but to share with you that I too can feel like this psalmist sometimes. And I need this message both as a victim of others' wrongdoing and as a wrongdoer myself. So, my prayer for us today, that we will continue to fully commit our ways to the Lord each day, and trust in his judgment and justice. That we will be able to be still and patient, knowing that God's timing is perfect. That we'll know in our hearts, not just our heads, that the Lord God upholds the righteous and that we are never alone. And that we will learn to live more like Jesus every day, in loving and forgiving each other. So as I come to the end, I've got a couple of questions for you to ponder. We're going to have a short pause to ponder these, and the band will come up in a bit. My question is, where is there injustice in the world or the city or in your life? Where is there injustice? And what does it look like to give that to God, even when it's hard?